Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com. Today is Monday, January 2nd, 2006, and this is show number 24. Well, Happy New Year! We spent the night in San Francisco with good friends. Even though it was raining like crazy, we had a great time. We actually stayed in Little Japan, which was pretty interesting, so we got to have some great sushi. I know that's a traditional New Year's Eve meal. And one of the fun things for us was to try out that whole public transportation thing. Living in Los Angeles, we're more the drive-your-car-everywhere kind of people, so this was a new experience for us, and I know you're probably all laughing at us for that, but we took a regular bus, we took an electric bus, we rode the cable cars, and we rode a streetcar. The streetcar was really cool. It was a 1928 Milan streetcar that they actually bought from Milan, Italy, and as the streetcar driver explained to me, they actually bought these from Italy. And that was so that the Italians could buy new ones. So he was actually kind of snotty about our streetcars. But it was pretty cool as he described to me how he frequently, like twice in the last month, has had a runaway car. He said every time you brake driving one of these cars, you brake once to find out if it's going to stop and the second time to actually stop. And the way you actually stop one of these things, if it's a runaway, is there's actually a sandbag thing. So it dumps sand on the tracks to slow the car down. He told me that he quit drinking in the mid-1980s, and he almost started up again after doing this twice. So I was feeling pretty strong about it. But one of the funnest things was we had seven people, and it turned out to take a cab to the hotel would have been about $75, $80. To take an auto airport or shuttle kind of thing, it was going to cost $88. But to take a limo was $83, so we traveled in style and took a limo. We probably should have been really energetic and taken BART, but we weren't quite that excited about it. We had great clam chowder bowls down on Pier 39, which is kind of a touristy kind of place, but it was really fun, and they had a street guy doing magic kind of tricks and juggling and that sort of stuff, and he dragged my son up there on stage, so that was pretty fun. And I think the crowning part of the story of the weekend was that on New Year's Eve, we're walking down the street, coming back from watching a movie, and these drunk Russian guys, these guys are walking along, they got their bottles of God knows what, I think it was vodka, because I think we found the vodka bottle the next day, but the guy looks us and he says, Merry New Year! And we just love that, because we kept saying, no, it's Merry Christmas, it's Happy New Year, and the guy goes, Merry New Year! So that's what we've been babbling to ourselves the last couple of days. We enjoyed it. But anyway, between the Martian death, flu, Christmas, and New Year's, I've been off by a day three times in a row here. I normally podcast on Sundays, but it's been Monday 3 weeks in a row. But I promise I'll get back on my Sunday schedule next week when I'm actually going to work. So we don't have any new countries this week. I think people are actually relaxing on the whole podcast front these last couple of weeks. I've noticed a lot of prominent podcasters have not even been posting in this last week. So at least I've been getting it out there, even if I am a day late. So I was really excited to find out that a guy named Slough is a listener to the NoSilicast. He's the guy that wrote the Pod Safe for Peace song, If Every Day Were Christmas, that I played just on show number 21. He claims he's not famous, but I feel like a celebrity because he's listening now. I appreciate every listener to the podcast, and I thank all of you for staying subscribed. I've had a really enjoyable week hassling with my car repair. Oh man, what a pain. The good news is that the mom of the kid who hit me turned out to be a real hoot. She's so funny. Even while she was facing $1,500 in charges right after Christmas, dealing with insurance companies, she had a great sense of humor, and she and I had been emailing back and forth, and she's just delightful. She sent me a hilarious email that just cracked me up. But my car will be in the shop for another week, but we've been able to work it out all okay. And whenever I get stressed out about it, I keep chanting to myself, the pedestrian did not get hurt. One of our listeners here wrote to me and he said, well, just remember, cars can be repaired, but mangled bodies aren't ever the same. So I'm happy about that. I want to do a little update to the iPod video review I did. Last week I described a few of the things that bugged me about the iPod video, and I learned a bit more this week that will help, but I have a new pet peeve to add to the end of it. One of the things that bugged me was that I left a video and came back in, and it did not start back up where I was. And I was really annoyed at that, because on the audio tracks, you can do that. And so I was kind of bummed that the video you couldn't, and there was no fast forward to even recover. But the solution with all electronics problems is to hand them to a teenager. My son Kyle heard me complaining about that, the fact that there was no fast forward, and he reached over, grabbed the iPod from me, clicked the center wheel, which brought up the timeline for the video, and then he used his finger on the scroll wheel, and the timeline screamed on by. So it is a very good fast forward. You can go right back to wherever you were if you knew where you were. And it didn't start the video at the new point until he stopped scrolling, and it worked just great. So just for future reference, it turns out that works on music and videos. The other thing I found digging around Apple support notes was that within each song's Get Info entry on the Options tab, there's a selection called Remember Playback Position. Evidently, on the video version of This Week in Tech, the podcast that I was listening to, the one that's downloadable through BitTorrent, they did not click that option before they saved the file. I checked some random podcasts, and they did have it selected, so that's why it had worked when I was listening to audio podcasts on the Nano, but it didn't work on this particular one. I blamed the video iPod, and it stands unjustly accused. It is perfectly capable of going right back to where you stopped. So I just realized that I should be selecting that option for you guys, so that when you need to interrupt playback on the NoSillaCast, like listener Neil, when he wanted to run over and listen to or look at something I'd written on the website, you'll be able to hop right back in. Sure hope I remember to do that. If you notice that I've forgotten and it bugs you, send me a note and remind me to get it going. I need to add a new pet peeve with the iPod video, though, is I noticed that a certain video podcast that used to come into the iPod automatically, I had it set up as a subscription. It was in the list of podcasts that I wanted. I actually have my iPod set up to download all podcasts all the time whenever there's a new one. And this one podcast, video podcast, it was actually Command-N, just stopped updating, even though it had updated in my iTunes library. It is no longer coming into my iPod. Listener Brandon reported the exact same problem on his iPod video, but it was with purchased music videos from the iTunes Music Store. Both of them were by the same artist, but one comes in and one does not. They're both sitting in his music library, or in his video library, but one works and one doesn't. So this sure sounds like a bug to me. On mine, I have it set up to bring in 100% of my music, 100% of my podcasts and videos and photos, all of it, but it doesn't seem to work reliably. I bet if I deleted the feed for Command-N and I resubscribed, it would work, but that's really a pain when it's video because it takes a long time to download those. Not as good, not as easy as when it's just audio. Well, stay tuned on this one, pun intended. One of my favorite Christmas presents that I got this year was the Lanyard headphones for the Nano. I've included a photo of them in the show notes. They're $39, which is more than I wanted to spend just for a fling, you know. So I seem to have this threshold around $20, $30 I'll spend. It hits $40. Man, I got to think about it. But as a Christmas present, I figured I could ask for it. The Nano is great for jogging, but I don't have pockets in my running shorts. And I've tried a clip attachment, and it kind of digs into my side. So I've kind of just been running with it in my hand. And it works, but it's kind of annoying. Now with the Lanyard headphones, I can tuck it into my shirt, and off I go with it nice and flat against my chest, and it doesn't move. So the way this works is it plugs into the audio jack on the bottom and the dock connector, but it's just a little piece of plastic that goes into the dock connector to help it hang on. So when you've got it on like this, it's not jiggling around, your headphones aren't bouncing all over, because now the length of the headphones is actually shorter, and the headphones stay in my ears better, so it was a lot less annoying. And, of course, it still has the white headphones for the cool factor. My husband Steve got a cool present for me for Christmas. I got him the Roku SoundBridge M1000. This is a device that jumps on your wireless network, compatible with B or G networks, and streams your music from your iTunes music library into your stereo. I know there's lots of devices that do this, but I like the form factor of the Roku. It's about, what is it, maybe 10 or 12 inches long, and it's sort of a cylinder with a flat spot on the back so it sits nicely, and it has a nice big display on it. It shows the song or playlist you're working with, and allows you to browse by album, by artist, and has lots of other nice options, all with the remote control. The menus are a little weird to work with, though. For example, when I sat down to play with it, it was showing the date and time. Well, to get it to work, I had to hit the power button, and that seemed unintuitive to me because it seemed like it's already on, So if I push the power button, am I turning it off? But when I push the power button, it actually switches into menus that you can actually work with. Once you're in one iTunes library, so we have, you know, three or four computers on at any given time with all different iTunes libraries, but if you're into one of them, to get out of it, you can't just hit the back button. Hit the back button and it only takes you up to that iTunes library. So to get out of it, you have to scroll past playlists, browse, all kinds of other menus until you get to something like configure, which then lets you change the library. I think it would make more sense to just be able to back to the original menu. The sound quality is as good as it is on the computer, even better, because now it's through your nice stereo speakers. I have one huge problem with the unit, though. Evidently, Apple will not let Roku stream protected AAC songs purchased through the iTunes Music Store. The Roku site says that as soon as Apple lets them, they will stream protected AAC files. So let me make sure I understand this right. If I paid for the music, I'm not allowed to stream it. But if I went out and stole it, or in my case, ripped it from my old CDs, then I can stream it? What kind of sense does that make? I mean, I know the RIAA has got all kinds of Nazi controls, everything, but come on. If I paid for it, I can't play it, but if I stole it, I could. So am I supposed to go out and steal it now so that I can play the music that I paid for? I don't understand this at all. And we know Apple allows streaming to the Airport Express, so I think it'll do protected files. I really should check that. But it does say in their documentation that anything you can play in iTunes, MP3 files, audiobooks, even Dolby surround sound, you can play using iTunes. So I think that the Apple Airport Express will play that. And the other thing is, I did buy an Airport Express to use for iTunes streaming, but it's so lame. It functionally sort of works, but there's no remote, there's no display. So if I want to change songs, I have to walk upstairs to the tower where our real big music library is. So even though I paid for an Express, I paid for the music, I paid for all of the equipment they sell practically, I can't stream music I paid for. Yeah, so annoying. Well, I guess what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to write these songs out to CD, then pull them back into iTunes as MP3 files, losing quality on the way, and doubling the number of files that are stored. Yeah, that's great. The only other choice I seem to have is to use a third-party tool to bypass the digital rights management, which I'm sure is illegal. This really infuriates me. But anyway, I don't want to blame Roku, because I don't think they're probably the bad guys in this story. And I really do like the Roku Soundbridge in spite of Apple and the RIAA. So check it out at RokuLabs.com. All right, one of the things I said at the beginning when I first started this podcast is that my goal is always to give you a tool that solves a problem you already had. So imagine you're at the airport waiting for a flight and you remember that it's little Timmy's birthday tomorrow and you forgot to pick up a gift. What if you could walk up to a vending machine, swipe your credit card, and buy him an iPod or a Sony PSP? Science fiction, you think? Nope, they're already here. I had read about these before, in Wired magazine, of course, but I saw one this weekend in San Francisco in the food court of Macy's. Get this, all these little, food places to eat, and I walk up, here's a vending machine, and it's got iPods and PSPs in them. So sales, evidently, in areas like this are measured as a function of the overhead costs, two major contributors to which are the human labor and the square feet of sales space. So the vending machines are very small in size compared to even the smallest retail shops, and they have no human labor other than loading them and taking out all the money they're going to make. Well, actually, it's a credit card. There's not even money to take away, so it's just loading them. The second thing that makes this device a workable idea is that the devices for sale are pretty much the same price and the same thing anywhere you buy them. So you're not sacrificing a deal, or there's not like a lot of debate. I mean, you pretty much either want a Shuffle, you want a Nano, or you want a 30 or 60 gig iPod, and then you got to pick black or white. And you know what it's going to be. It's exactly the same everywhere, and it costs the same everywhere. So because these devices are pretty standardized, people already pretty much know what they want, and it's only a matter of what they can afford. Gotta wonder, though, whether I'm going to have the nerve to swipe my credit card and put $300 in a vending machine. Probably safer than buying through the mail and things like that anyway. I took a few pictures, and I've put them up on podfeet.com in the show notes so you can see what the vending machines look like. I got a picture of the entire machine, a close-up of the menu screen so you can see how you can pick it, and a close-up of the iPods themselves in the vending machine. So I'm actually going to leave out the Mac people for once and talk about a Windows-only free application called Picasa. Picasa is an excellent photo managing tool. For those of you who've recently gotten your first digital camera, you'll find out quickly that management of your photos can turn into a nightmare. And if you've got a had a digital camera for a long time, you know what I'm talking about. So the problem this software solves is the management of the photos, but it takes it way beyond that. Picasa 2 is available for free download at picasa.com or picasa.google.com. It used to be a commercial product until until Google bought it. Not sure why they would give it away for free, but hey, it's great for us. Once you download Picasa, it can be set to organize your existing photos automatically. Picasa allows you to rename and move your photos around in their folders and rename photos as well, and then those changes will be visible out in Windows Explorer. You can label and tag your pictures as well as rate them, but I don't know about you guys, but I never ever do that. That takes a lot of time. In fact, I think I'm one of the few people on the planet that actually names their photos. Everybody I see has their photos named DSC00726. Picasa allows you to keep one picture in multiple albums without making duplicate copies, which is kind of nice. So you could have photos of little Timmy getting his brand new iPod from you from the vending machine. Might be in a folder called Timmy, but might also be in an in-laws folder or something like that. So again, Picasa not only organizes your photos, but it has rudimentary photo correction capabilities. Not really that rudimentary. It has cropping, straightening, and red-eye removal, which seem to be kind of the standards. But it also has the ability to do color correction using the histogram for red, green, and blue, more like the prosumer level products. You'll notice a lot of the features I'm describing are what already exists in iPhoto, which might be a reason that this is a Windows-only application because we already have iPhoto. Picasa allows you to share your photos into your email program or your Gmail account, of course, and it has built-in blogging, so you can just push a button that says, "Put this photo on my blog." You can make slideshows to put on a CD, and they make it easy to move them to a compact flash device if you want to share with someone. You can have prints made either to your printer or order prints from most of the major online printing sites, such as my favorite, Shutterfly.com. Probably one of the most important features of Picasa and why I would run around loading it on all of your PC friends' machines is there's a button that says "Create a Gift CD," which is really a way to burn to a CD or DVD to archive and back up your photos. I know so many people who never back up their pictures, living on blind faith that their disk won't ever fail. The other thing I've noticed is that, and I'm a real novice on the Windows side, but it seems to be hard to make a CD, to burn a CD. Like, you've got to have an application to do it. On the Mac side, you just drag stuff onto it, just like it's a folder, and you just say burn, and it just does. It's all built in. But it seems like on the PC side, you got to have an application, you got to do different things, and don't even get me started on the whole ISO thing. But this is a real easy way to get it done and make sure people can make their archives and backups and really, really encourage your friends to do that and do it yourself if you're not doing it. I just breaks my heart when I hear about people losing their photos because they didn't back them up. So I installed the software on my sister-in-law's PC, and here's my marketing sample set of one. She said right off the bat, clicking around in it, she said, "I like this way better than the commercial product I had before." She had a brand new PC, and she was going to reload the old application. She said, "I'm not even going to do it. This works great." So check it out at picasa.google.com. I have a little Spamex update. On our show from November 6th, 2005, show number 15, I talked about this great service called Spamex that allows you to create fake email addresses to give out to people that you're buying from online. And it's a great service. I actually, honest to God, I'm not joking here. On my private email account, I get no spam. Any email I get, if I start getting spammed by somebody, even somebody I bought from, I can simply turn off that address and I never hear from them again. It's the coolest thing. It's well worth the $9.95 a year that I pay to have that service. But when my husband signed up, for some reason it was free. And I was like, "Well, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense because there's no ads, there's nothing. I mean, there's simply the service." And I couldn't figure out why they would have no ads and still be free. So I wrote to the Spamex folks and asked them about that. And they figured out what had happened. Back in July, they donated a number of accounts to the Autism Society, So these people are cool too. And they made a mistake on how they set it up, and it allowed people to sign up for the account directly through the website rather than by using an authorization code. The nice thing is the person writing to me said that I could keep our free account until the renewal date, even though I offered to pay up. It was everything I could do not to tell them that I thought it was worth way more than the $9.95 that I pay a year to be spam-free. I really encourage you to check the service out at spamx.com. It is so cool. You can store your passwords from the 8,000 different websites you go to where you buy things. Just can't say enough good things about it. So anyway, it looks like that's going to wrap it up for the first episode of the NoSillaCast for 2006. As always, please post comments on podfeet.com or send me an email at allison@podfeet.com. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.